ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Thanks so much for listening to the 60th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I've got a great interview with Jeff Kaufman, creator of the book released by Xenoscope called Whore. You're going to want to hear his interview. It's a lot of fun. We get to talk about a lot of things that happened in the book, and it's quite interesting. Then I'll review this week's comics. After that, Gianluca Glaser joins me for the latest news and previews, and everything wraps up with my review of The Dark Knight Rises. Before we get to the rest of the show, I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened on Friday last week. A gunman went into a theater in Colorado and killed 12 people. At least that's the number at this recording, and injured over 50. I was very sorry to hear about it, and it makes doing an entertainment podcast seem somewhat small by comparison with the loss of life. So that's why this is a little behind. I actually wanted to get this podcast out on Friday because that's when I would see The Dark Knight Rises. So I apologize for being somewhat late. I thought a long time about what was going on, and I followed the developments out there in Colorado. But I wanted to say how sorry I am this happened. I'm also sorry if it impacts The Dark Knight Rises. The loss of life comes first, of course, but then when the movie might suffer some too, and this is a movie I've been looking forward to for quite a long time, I would hate for The Dark Knight Rises to lose a lot of attendance because of it. It's been sad because the Batman trilogy of films just been plagued by terrible problems. Heath Ledger's death and the injury that Morgan Freeman endured. So this poor trilogy is a great one. It's a wonderful set of films about Batman, and it really moves him into the 21st century, but I was so sorry that this happened, and it took a little while for me to gather my thoughts again with all these kinds of things, but I just wanted to let everyone know I'm happy to get this episode out so you can listen to it, and we have a lot of good things, so let's get on with the show. Talking today with Jeff Kaufman, one of the creators of Whore, a very interesting and fun comic book. And how are you doing today, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Just got back from Comic-Con, so I'm a little worn out. 7 days of booth work and drinking will do that to you.
I was wondering how that went for you. Is this your first time there?
No. I've been in Comic-Con. This is my sixth one, but I've only had two graphic novels show there. The rest were single issues, so this is only my second graphic novel at Comic-Con, but it's been fun.
Yeah. Have you got a couple minutes to talk about war?
Yeah, absolutely. It does sound weird when you say it, though.
I know. I got a big...
It took me a little bit to get used to it, too. But I figured out that I was sitting in San Diego with a 12-foot banner behind me. I think I desensitized myself to it.
Yeah. You should have put a picture of the character instead.
Oh, it was. It had the cover. It was a 12-foot by 9-foot cover behind me.
Okay.
So it was pretty serious, and yeah, some parents got a little edgy, but it's funny how you can buy them off with a big city hacky sack. It was ungodly. I'll figure that out later, but that seems that's the way it works.
I just wonder, have you gotten any response from the Million Mom folks about it?
I get heat all the time from it. It's kind of funny. I get two things. People are saying, oh, you're just doing this for attention to sell books, and then I get it from people, how dare you do this? Now, by titling a book Whore, I guarantee there are stores that aren't going to order the book. Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with, okay, we're going to shock people. It just had to do with putting your foot down artistically sometime and saying, okay, you know, I think it's worth the risk. I think this title really defines what I'm trying to do instead of, okay, this is just going to be a cheap ploy to get sales, which is exactly the opposite. You have to convince people to buy a book named Whore. They don't come running for it.
Is this available now, or do you have a release date for it?
July is the Diamond Order date, and the release date is in September. We had preview copies in San Diego for people, so that was fun for people, our fans, to get a taste of it before it came out in September.
Mm-hmm. Great. I'm looking forward to it. It retails for what, $9.99?
Yeah, or as I like to call it, 40 pages for free. you think 22 pages is normally 325, so by the time I'm done, I give you 40 pages for free. It's a nice little thing we do for you.
Great. Now, it's interesting because the main character of horror, when I hear the word horror, of course, I don't know, maybe it's my bias, but I think of a woman. But the person who identifies himself as a horror is a guy in the book, which I find interesting.
Yeah, Jacob Mars is the head character. He got downsized from the CIA and just has too many bills to be picky. Whatever jobs his handler gets him, he sets a price. And we've yet to come up with a situation where he would not take the money. So whether I like it or not, no matter how upset he is and no matter how it affects his feelings or his morals or anything else, it's like, hey, I need the money. Mm-hmm. And that's how I associate a whore with. I don't see a whore as a streetwalker or an escort. I see it as anybody who does anything for money without any consequence.
Mm-hmm. I was reading the introduction to the book, and you were talking about the fact that you had some downtime between projects. You did Terminal Alice, and you had a little time before something else. And so you launched into this project. Where did the inspiration for the book come from?
Well, what happened was is we had done Terminal Alice before that. It was released last year, last September. Mm-hmm. And I had killed 82 people in 100 pages. There were two sex scenes, one in a coffin. And I didn't want to follow it up with something that was less.
Mm-hmm.
And to do, you know, like a sophomore slump, like with a recording artist. I didn't want to be like that. Even though I had done 31 single issues before, I really wanted to define my career by writing graphic novels. So I wanted the second one just to completely blow away the first one. And the only way I could do that was with a character like Jacob Mars.
Mm-hmm. Is he based on anybody you know?
Oh, God, I hope not. my wife's a little tough when she reads these things, you know, because she, oh, you want to do that, baby? I'm too tired to do something like that. It's Mars is just, if you make somebody completely morally ambivalent, and he'll do the right thing if it fits in. But it was really fun to be able to write a character that I really didn't have to concern myself with his integrity or morals. It was just a guy who simply logically did what he needed to do, and that's fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a very fun book, I have to say. Now, it's not meant for kids.
No.
The moment you turn the first page, you realize, okay, this is not meant for children. And if you don't like the F word, then this is not a book for you to pick up either. But if you can get past those things, it's quite a lot of fun. I mean, there are some situations in there that are just hilarious. When he goes to the dog show and his resolution to the dog show problem, I thought was hilarious.
This is the problem. You want to talk about it. And
yeah.
It kills me not to talk about it, but I also know that people are you kidding me? And it's like a movie preview. You don't want to give away the best parts. And I love Jacob Mars. Jacob Mars allows me to do these really terrible things in a very funny way. And I think anybody would know. Come on, the book is titled Whore. You can't possibly expect it to be an all-ages book. All I know is when people walk by, we had these shirts at Comic-Con just black, and it said Whore using our logo. Mm-hmm. And it just had a graphic novel on it, but people wanted these T-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like laughing, going, you know, maybe I should walk around with the sweatpants that say juicy on the butt, whore on the front. and it's just so much fun to be able to do a guy like this. And no, it's clearly not for kids. I titled the book that way. So when people ask me why I didn't name it Jacob Mars or Man with a Gun or something else, I'm telling you, this is a terrible book. but I also don't show nudity. You don't see breasts. I mean, you don't see private parts. I mean, you could tell they're having sex, but we shadow that out. So this is not pornography. It's like an R-rated movie. You throw the F-bomb more than three times, you know, you have sexually suggestive scenes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what it is.
Now, I got a huge kick out of the fact that Jacob Mars meets a very famous person who's in the news every day.
People got mad.
I thought based on his familiarity with drugs and other things like that, they might actually put this in the campaign or something. But I got a kick because what I enjoyed was Jacob Mars is absolutely unimpressed by him. Played basketball, and he spots him 10 points. And then, of course, he comes back and outdoes the famous person. I found that to be quite funny. Mr. Mars is absolutely unimpressed by anybody he comes across, basically. And I thought that was fun.
What I want to do, and this is half my readers are women, and I don't know why. I still don't get it. I guess because when I do really bad things, I explain it. I just don't do it for no reason because I need a logical interpretation. I used to be a criminal defense attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of having to explain a completely illogical thing in a way that six jurors would understand it just comes naturally to me. And it took me a long time to develop this style because I like to tell people when they say they want to write comic books that you have to do some really bad stuff to be good. I mean, when I say bad stuff, I mean, you have to write some terrible things to a point where you go, okay, I won't do that again. So I always feel like it's an opportunity to get better and learn. But this book scares me a little bit because I really just don't know. I don't want to do a sequel, and I already know the next two books.
Okay.
I just don't know how to beat this guy. I really don't. I should be straightforward. I can't beat this character.
Yeah, he's just quite the thing. There's two things that I particularly enjoyed that I wanted to mention real quickly, is that somebody actually pays him to impregnate someone, which I found interesting. I mean, isn't that – the guys like this, I think that's probably their ultimate fantasy, is to have that kind of thing happen, which I thought that was hilarious. He's trying again and again to get her pregnant, and I just found that was just hilarious stuff.
That was a tough situation because people were saying to me, Jeff, he's impregnating this woman. I said, first off, her father – if the premise is simply this. Her father wants him to impregnate her so the kid can go back 20 years and kill him.
Yeah,
this is not a plus for him. And no. Anybody who's ever dealt with anything deal with fertility realizes this is more of a job than a thing. So that you all know, I have a friend of mine named Sharam, and he's one of these people who is extremely, how can I say it? He likes to make you feel uncomfortable all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that I made the character that he's supposed to name knock up, Sharoma, is my way of kicking my friend in his mouth. So I don't have to. No matter what he does for me the rest of the life, I know that my main character's main goal is to knock him up. But it just made sense to me. It makes sense to take these illogical situations. And I like the way she handles it. I think women have a certain amount of dignity, and then sometimes we all don't.
Right.
And it is funny the way she reacts to it over a period of time, that it becomes insane.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to give away the end. There's a really great ending to this. It's fun along. And then when you get to the ending, let's just say that it's very satisfying, that we come to understand what's happening clearly. And I just thought that was a really nice way to wrap the whole thing up. If people think this is just a titillating book, it has some of that to it, but there's actually a really good story going on. And I think that's one of the strengths of this comic.
Well, what I try to do is this, and this is from now on. This is my rule I want to live by. I want to smack you at the end. I want to give you that Usual Suspects ending. I want to give you that Book of Eli. I want to do these things where you go, oh, my God, I didn't even see that coming. And you have to understand, I know my ending. And I know I write all this nonsense in there, but it all leads up to the ending. There's math throughout this thing. I mean, I used to read Peter Anthony as a kid, and his books where one character would be living backwards for 9 books, I couldn't figure out how he did it until I got it. He knew his ending.
Yeah.
So my goal is to get you. So if you really look back at it and you go, God, these crazy scenes were set up for a specific purpose. Now, I don't want to ruin the ending, but everything has a purpose to it.
Right.
So,
and even knowing that, I don't think you'll be able to guess the ending. Because when I got to the ending, I was very surprised, but I was very pleased because I like when something hangs together. I like when it makes sense. And when I got to the end, I said, oh, right, that's a great ending because it says so much about the situation and it explains a lot of why things are happening. I think that's important in a book like this. You can have your fun along the way, but a really good story is what's going to sell the book ultimately. And I think that this book really has that.
Well, thank you. You know what's funny about it? People bring up the pregnancy, but that's not even the most disturbing thing I do to you. The problem is this, there's a couple scenes in there where I like the idea of a certain thing, and then the worst part about it is there's actually reality to it, where I take a person and I see them in real life, and then I alter it, because I like the idea of, I want people to associate things, I want people to see things, and I guess that was the fun with this book, that, yes, people are not going to buy it because of the name, I know that, but like I said, this book has been scripted from the cover of the book, all the way through the forward, all the way to the ending. There's nothing in this book that happened by accident or that was filler or something like that. And I feel good about that. I feel I put a nice little puzzle together and hopefully people will appreciate it.
Now, so people know, too, there are several smaller stories involved, and that's what we're referring to. There are things that he gets hired to do, and I don't want to mention them all because I think it's nice to have some surprises along the way. But he deals with all kinds of people. I mean, all different groups of people, all races, and he treats them all with the same amount of disdain Mr. Mars does, and I just find that to be a lot of fun. He just is absolutely unimpressed by anyone. I love the way that he does it. Even when he's got to pretend to be gay at some point, he struggles with that some, but it's just a hilarious thing. He takes whatever situation situation he comes into and gets through it. And I just think if there's any redeemable quality to Mr. Mars, it's that. I think he can work his way through really about anything.
I mean, the big thing, some of the things I wanted to tackle in my last two books, Terminal Alice and this book, there are certain scenes where there are some homophobic things said, there's some things happen, and people always ask me, do I have a purpose? Do I have a point? And unlike my, let's just say, my future dream jobs, maybe, I don't feel a need to announce it. I think certain things exist in our society, and since they exist in our life, then why should they exist in our writings? Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy that part of it. I like that Mars, his goal is just to smack you sometimes. It doesn't mean anything. He just likes to give you a backhand every once in a while. It reminds me of Sean Connery smacking Ursula Andrews. Sometimes you just have that moment where you just want... Mars is the kind of guy... How can I express this? I liked the Sean Connery Bond. I liked that we forgave him for everything. And we forgive Mars. Every chapter we forgive him. He does these terrible things and he says these awful things. And we are completely amused by him. That's very tough to do.
He's also someone who, as capable as he is, he's also put into very uncomfortable situations. And so we sympathize with that because we get in uncomfortable situations. We have to work our way through them. So we feel for him doing that. And he's going through situations that many of us would not want to ever be in.
He accepted the price.
Yeah.
It's always the same. It's always like, okay, Mars, this is terrible. Let's say we want you to run down the street in a banana costume with chaps on and your butt sticking out the back. They want 10,000, 15,000, and I'll do it. You know, he'll find a price that will make him accept it.
Yeah, it's a great book. Now, one of the things I want to talk about, too, this isn't the first time you've worked with Marco Turini as far as the art goes. He also worked on Terminal Alice with you. And I think that the art is really good. He does a very good job of making things really easy to see what's happening and makes it very clean and clear to see. And I like that. Sometimes when people do these kinds of situations, they're murky. But I appreciate the fact that it's very easy to understand what's happening. And that's a good thing for a comic like this.
I like to say Marco has a very European feel for the way he draws. You have to understand, Marco speaks very little English.
Oh.
So my scripts are translated by his Czechoslovakian wife, who I can tell you, I like to say that she wants Marco's artwork in the Louvre, not in the Louvre bathroom. so she does not appreciate some of the things I probably ask him to draw. But if it's confusing or I really want it down, I include a ridiculous amount of pictures in my scripts that I just like copy a JPEG in. Where I say, okay, this is a background I like, or this is the kind of car, this is the type, especially with weapons, or the way somebody gets punched. I'll go online and see something because I really want for the reader not to look at something and go, oh, that's not realistic. Oh, that gun doesn't exist, or this, so on. So even though I'm writing a bunch of, let's say, penis and fart jokes sometimes, there's a logic and reality to it. But Marco, when he did Terminal Alice, that was the first time we really worked together. And I think we learned a lot from each other so that the second book had a different feeling. Now, I want you also to give credit to Jim Brown from IDW, the colorist. A lot of people don't understand how important a colorist is to an attitude of the book. You know, they make these choices. The penciler doesn't make it. The anchor doesn't make it. I don't make it. So a lot of the feeling of the book also comes from Jim Brown. I've never worked with a colorist that I have this much respect for. And some people are cover artists, but Jim understands the flow of a story real well and understands what it takes to really work the mood. So I think that's a very important thing to say too.
Well, he tends to use more realistic and subdued colors was one thing I was noticing about it. Comics tend to be superhero things, and so we're used to gaudy costumes and stuff. And he does use bright colors occasionally, but it's there for a purpose.
Yeah.
And it's not just in there just to, you know, to be visually pulling you through the book. It's there because this is something that demands that kind of color, and I like that.
I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I talk to them. Jim and I talk a lot. You know, Marco and I, you know, we don't talk a lot because other than Jeff. That's the extent of our conversations normally. But Jim and I do talk a lot about the feeling of the book and things like that. I've been fortunate to work with Jim. I think we've worked on about 400 pages together in the history of our relationship. And believe it or not, I have never met him. I do 15 conventions a year, and I still have not met Jim. And that is the only thing I regret in this industry. Out of all the nonsense that's happened to me, I regret not meeting Jim Brown.
Oh, well, you'll have to do that sometime. That'd be kind of fun.
I think we're working on New York. I think he'll come to New York Comic Con, and we'll be able to at least have one drink together.
Well, that'd be good. Now, you said it's going to be in the Diamond Previews.
Well, it shipped, the stores have to order it this month.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, if your stores don't order it, you're not going to get a copy of it. Mm-hmm. They just do not take risks on graphic novels.
Right.
And I understand that. These stores are suffering, and they have to pick and choose. Mm-hmm. So if you want the books, let your local store know. Let Amazon know. Let Barnes & Noble know. Mm-hmm. So that they'll save a copy for you, because this is one of those books that I have a feeling that it will be hard to find because of the name.
Well, I hope it sells well, because it's a lot of fun. I like a lot of variety in my reading, so it scratched that itch for me, because I like to see something different. I read a lot of superhero books, and I read adventure books and stuff like that. This was a very different character. You don't have anybody in there, really, that's very heroic, shall we say, in the purest sense of the word, like a superhero. But you've got a lot of interesting characters who we can relate to, and I think that's a really strong thing for the book. And I hope people will pick it up, because I really think it's a lot of fun.
Listen, I can't thank you enough. Somebody asked me, I mean, this is my 33rd book. Mm-hmm. And I look back at my writing career and say, what did I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
And this is who I wanted to be, you know, 5 years ago, the way I wrote. I wish I would have known what I know now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying that I'm a great writer. I'm just saying that I know more than I did a while ago. And hopefully my storytelling has improved. I mean, that's the thing. I've been very fortunate in these books to deal with really, really talented people between Trini, James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you the cover story, because you'll notice that that cover looks a little haunting.
Mm-hmm.
But it was meant to look that way. We've had it behind me. People always ask me who the artist was. Well, Felix Serrano, he actually covers a couple Kirkman books and colors covers for Top Cow, did the cover.
Mm-hmm.
But the cover is kind of, let's just call it a mixed media. I want you to get what you get out of it. It's the idea that I want you to focus in on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
I call the cover the human chair.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see if it was possible. So we actually did the model shoot.
Oh, my goodness.
Where we actually laid these people out.
Yeah.
The nudity, trust me. I didn't want, my wife, I still say, baby, that had nothing to do with me. We actually bought about $300 worth of satin to wrap these girls in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, well, I don't see why we have to do this. And and if I had a choice, even though the cover was perfect, I really wish it would have worked out the other way. Because when you're married, you have certain regrets.
Yeah.
I was actually standing in the room when that happened. But it was what it was. I don't think I've ever put a better cover together, and I've been having the benefit of working with some really brilliant artists. So it does what it does.
Well, it's a kind of cover, I think once you see it, you won't forget it. It's something that you'll notice right away, so it's a very powerful cover in that way. From what I see in the credits, don't you do a cover as well, or is your name in there because you...
Yes, I was responsible for the original image, and then Felix and I worked on the image after that, and since he did the heavy lifting, I've always believed in that. The writer, I craft the book and everything else like that, but I only spend so many hours, while the artist will spend 8 times... as much time as I do on the book. So I really, sometimes people always say that self-deprecating, Jeff, you're the one who does it. Yes, I come up with the cute ideas, but this work is hard. It's not romantic. It's sitting at a table for 8 hours on each page.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's where a significant amount of the credit should be owed. So that's just my feeling on that. But yeah, Jim, it was kind of funny because Felix said to me when I talked to him about it, he goes, what are you asking me to do, Jeff? And I was going, well, I want you to oil paint over the top of this photo.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought I was insane. And we really went back and forth on this for a while, for 3 days, until we were able to go, okay, increase it, pop it, do it. I've never tried to make a piece of art look less real. And I guarantee we spent more time on this cover than I would have done if I would have wanted to create this cover from scratch.
So,
between the photo shoots, the digital thing, between, it was animal, but I love it because the idea for is I don't have to pick panties on the corner of the logo to symbolize what this book is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes less is more, and even though I wrap them in naked women, they're not like these three big-breasted women. In fact, they're probably the smallest-breasted women on a comic book cover. Except it does what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, every comic to me is a marriage of sorts. It's a writer and artist working together. And when it works together, it's perfect and it's a wonderful thing to read. And that's what I think about Horror. I think it's a great story told very well and very interestingly and takes good use of the visuals as well. So I think that Horror is something that people ought to pick up and give a good chance because it's definitely worth reading and definitely worth picking up.
Yeah, I don't think I'll get an Eisner nomination just because of the name, but I do appreciate it.
Okay. Well, now, as far as things going for the future, are there any projects you're going to do after Horror that you can tell us a little bit about?
Well, this is what happened. We did Terminal House, and Terminal House was a good book with a good twist, and people were upset because they had to wait a whole year for the next book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just what happens when it takes 9 to 11 months to do a book.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've been able to do now is I'm going to produce 2 graphic novels a year. And I'm going to release them in February and then at my Comic-Con release because I like to give the people who bust their ass to get to Comic-Con a special gift. So the next book is actually called Angel Falling. And it's being done by myself, Kevin West, and Mark McKenna, and Tom Chu. That's a really good lineup. That's a Marvel DC book. I feel really, you know, trust me, we're paying Marvel and DC, but I really just want our stuff to be better every book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal behind it. And the book after that, that's about a girl who wakes up in an alley and has no clue who she is other than she has this big angel wing tattoo on her back. And she's one of the most deadly people on the planet. And she's being protected by a 17-year-old autistic kid with Asperger's who has physical photo memory, who can't tell her where they are, but protects her anyway.
Okay.
So it's a mystery. And this one, I'm letting you know it's a mystery from page one.
Okay.
So I'm not going to sneak up on you. I'm letting you know.
Okay.
From the first page that I'm coming after you.
Okay.
You know, which is different than Mars where, you know, I kind of float around a little. And the book after that is Wildwood, which is Eureka meets Buffy. So I'm going a little more fantasy. I'm trying it because I really was happy creating these logical situations, but now you go outside your comfort zone a little bit because I want the challenge. That's where I want to go with it. So
very cool. Well, looking forward to those. I guess those will be solicited as well, so we can keep an eye out for those good things. So the book is Horror, and it should be out in the next couple of months. Be sure to order it. Order it quickly, because the July previews is out now.
Yeah.
So we want to make sure that people order that. If you turn your order form in, contact the person who orders at the store that you buy, and be sure to add this to your list, because I think it's definitely worth getting.
And it's a Zenoscope book. I'm fortunate. I'm the only book they publish outside of their own.
Wow.
So Zenoscope is my publisher, which is a good thing because I won't print another book in my life again, hopefully. my failures in publishing are global and universal, okay. So I try to stay away from that.
Okay, Jeff, it's a great book. I can't wait to get my paper copy of it, and I hope people will do the same, and much success in things as you go forward.
Hey, I appreciate that, Wayne.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
It's time to take a look at this week's comics. I had a tie for the best book of the week, and that was between 2 Star Trek comics. The first, of course, is Star Trek The Next Generation, Doctor Who Assimilation Squared, and that's issue number 3. Scott and David Tipton with Tony Lee are writing, and J.K. Woodward's providing the art. The description is, the two greatest science fiction properties of all time crossover for the first time in history, and chaos ensues, of course. It's great to see all the members of the Enterprise-D team interact with the folks from the TARDIS. However, for me, the most fun part of the issue was a flashback when the Doctor, played by Tom Baker, works together with Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, and the rest of that Enterprise crew. Even the art style changes from a painting style to one of a more standard comic book drawn look. It's a very well done sequence, and I laughed right out loud when the Doctor asks Kirk to distract a Cyberman and Kirk uses one of his trademark techniques, and I won't spoil it here. The last page has an interesting development that makes perfect sense given the fact that the universes seem to be changed somehow. Excellent book as usual. The second comic is Star Trek Ongoing, number 11, written by Mike Johnson with art by Claudia Balboni and a cover by Tim Bradstreet. The Truth About Tribbles, Part 1. This is the integration of the Tribbles into the movie universe, at least the current movie universe. And what's happening is we get to see how the new Star Trek is dealing with Tribbles. There's a lot of good explanation going on as to how the Tribbles came to be. And we also get to see a lot of fun things happening. There's a lot of comedy, of course. Whenever the Tribbles are involved, there will be. This was overseen by Robert Orci, well-known Star Trek sequel writer and producer. So the Tribbles are one of the most popular popular sci-fi aliens of all time. If you want to get in on the ground floor on part one, be sure to pick this up. Now, for the new 52 reviews this week, first up is Justice League, which continues the current fascinating story, and I like that a lot. The heroes encounter important visions from their pasts. Next, Nightwing tries to figure out just who's framing him. Then the Birds of Prey has Poison Ivy coercing the team into helping her do something that the rest of the team probably wouldn't do. Catwoman number 11 is full of action as Judd Winnick prepares to leave the book. Red Hood and the Outlaws number 11 reveals Starfire's origin in the new continuity. Then came Green Lantern Corps number 11 by Peter J. Tomasi, which shows the return of the Manhunters. Wonder Woman continues a godly storyline, very interesting. That's one of the best books that's out right now. Batwoman number 11 has her facing a shapeshifter. Captain Adam has him granting wishes to those around him, and it's not always a good thing. Meanwhile, Supergirl is hunted by a person covered in nanotechnology. In the Legion of Superheroes, there's an interesting tale continuing with the Dominators, one of my very favorite DC alien races. In Blue Beetle, Booster Gold shows up for the first time in the New 52 for that famous pairing. And the final one, DC Comics Presents, concludes the Savage, as in Vandal Savage and his daughter, three-issue story, which was kind of interesting. I like that. Other books that came out worth picking up include Batman Beyond Unlimited number 6, Before Watchmen Silk Spectre number 2, and Young Justice number 18 from DC Comics. Marvel has Avengers Academy number 33, Daredevil number 15, and Secret Service number 3. Valiant has Exo Manowar number 3, and The Spider number 3, Warehouse 13 trade paperback, and The Warlord of Mars Deja Thoris number 13 all come out from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
This is the Emperor. You're listening to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. Eat it.
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. Join us, your hosts, Miles P. McLaughlin and Scott Herzog, as we serve up a delightful menu of science fiction interviews and news in the television, movie, DVD, and book world. Test your geek cred with trivia. Top off your meal with the Sci-Fi 5 and 5. Come visit the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast at scifidinerpodcast.com or subscribe to us in iTunes. We're serving up sci-fi from here to the end of the universe.
Hey, it's time again for news and previews, and with me as always is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing, Gianluca?
I'm doing very well.
Good, good. What have we got as far as news this week?
Some interesting stuff. Just so people know, Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman are interested in doing another Hellboy movie. Unfortunately, there's no studios that agree with them.
Oh.
The first two movies didn't do that well financially, so it's tough to find someone to back that up. Interesting stuff, Rush Limbaugh has a conspiracy between the character Bane in The Dark Knight and Bane Capital, which is tied to a presidential Republican nominee for the presidential election, Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
Limbaugh's quote, "This movie, the audience is going to be huge. A lot of folks are going to see this movie, and a lot of brain-dead people. Entertainment, the pop culture crowd. And they're going to hear Bane in the movie, and they're going to associate Bane Capital. The thought that when they start paying attention to the campaign later in the year, and Obama and Democrats keep talking about Bane, Romney and Bane, that these people will think back to the Batman movie. Oh yeah, I know who that is. There are a lot of people who think it'll work. Others think you're really underestimating the American people to think that will work.
Well, interesting. Chuck Dixon, who actually created Bane back in, like, 1993, he's come out and basically said that he finds this funny, although he says he appreciates all the advertising for the movie.
Sure.
So there's no such thing as bad advertising, so he's very happy. People can talk about this as long as they want, as long as people go see the movie, so.
Absolutely.
Funny stuff, so.
Marvel has released an updated image for their Point One anthology, and it indicates that Ant-Man is going to be in it. So he's going to be returning to the Marvel Universe, probably because there's going to be a movie.
Right.
So, really cool news. A collection of publishers, Boom Studios, Dark Horse, DC, Diamond Select Toys, Dynamite, IDW, Image, and Marvel are all funding a big push to subsidize the installation of point-of-sale systems into comic book retail stores.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a point-of-sale system offered by Diamond allows retailers to make and adjust their orders very easily. The publishers that are in the point of sales, you know, and better discounts for retailers. So they're trying to bring everybody into the 21st century.
Well, that's a big deal for comic salespeople. For example, when Astonishing X-Men number 51, I think it was, with the wedding issue, a lot of people got caught flat-footed because they didn't know what was going to be in it when they ordered it. And less than a month before the book comes out, all this publicity hits. And I know several stores that were stuck without any issues at all. I mean, the first hour they were open, it was gone. And the rest of the time, they had to tell people they didn't have it, and they were hoping it would come in another couple weeks. So that's a big thing.
It is a big thing. So, IDW is going to be releasing a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles annual. It's going to be written and drawn by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle creator Kevin Eastman. The annual will release in October, and it's going to tie in with Nickelodeon's cartoon Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show, which premieres September 29th.
Cool.
Yeah. Comic-Con news, Hermes Press announced that it's partnering with Famous Monsters of Filmland. It's a classic magazine that's been around a long time. It's recently come back. Well, when I say recently, probably like a couple of years ago. So beginning in early 2013, Hermes, however you pronounce it, H-E-R-M-E-S. I've always pronounced it Hermes. We'll reprint the original run of Famous Monsters, issues 1 through 191, in a series of hardcover collections. Each collection will contain 3 to 5 issues and will be completely restored, and in some cases, digitally rebuilt from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, they plan to publish a line of art books celebrating the history of the magazine, which was launched in 1958 by publisher James Warren and editor Forrest J. Ackerman.
Hmm.
IDW will launch a new comic book series based on the Hasbro TV show My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, in November. The new series will be written by Katie Cook and art by Andy Price, who has worked on DC Legendary and Batman Archives. Covers will be contributed by the likes of Jill Thompson, no big surprise there, which seems like a great fit, and Stephanie Buscema, among others. Now, Wayne, do you know what they call guys who like My Little Pony?
No.
They're called bronies.
Bronies, like,
they are.
Like bro, okay.
Yes, so male fans of My Little Ponies are called bronies. I've learned that recently.
Okay.
Interesting news with Top Cow. They plan to release the first 5 monthly issues of its Cyberforce relaunch, free, digitally, and in print. Now, the company is raising money via Kickstarter project to finance the project. Premiums for high roller retailer backers include a signing at their store or an ad page in all 5 issues. The title will be launched in October, and support for the book on Kickstarter will be devoted to lowering the cost of copies to retailers, among other purposes. A hardcover collection of all 5 issues will also be published. The book will be written by Mark Silvestri and Matt Hawkins, with art by Ko Pham.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah, it's going to be kind of like a free comic book day book once it's funded.
Cool.
Where retailers only have to pay the shipping charges, basically, for it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Interesting stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Robertson and Allison Baker's digital publishing company Monkey Brain Comics had a panel at San Diego Comic-Con, and they announced 7 new titles. A quick rundown of them: Wander, by writer Kevin Church, who runs a popular blog, and artist Grace Allison. It's a fantastical story about a woman from Earth who ends up in a magical fantasy world. Mask and Mobsters, by Joshua Williams and Mike Henderson. A 1930s/40s crime story about the mob as they find their business interrupted by the birth of the superhero. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Intergalactic, by Joe Keatons and Ken Gehring. A realistic space story which explores what would have happened if humanity had kept pushing for space exploration. There's no aliens in the book. This is about a family who's trying to keep themselves alive in the depths of our lawless outer space. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Conqueror, by Chris Sweetser and Audrey Morris. It's a sci-fi kind of comedy with politics mixed into it. According to Switzer, there's a character called Princess Thunderpunch. Roundup, edited by Chris Switzer. It's an anthology title. Feature a number of creators like Kevin Church, Stan Lind, and Matt Kind, all writing Western-themed stories which last around 8 to 12 pages each.
Wow.
Dream Sequences Spirits of the Law by Brandon Seifert and Michael Montana. Seifert will write this series with a new artist for each story arc. Montana is aboard for the first story, which is called Spirit of the Law. And then finally, Awesome Adventures by Chris Robertson and Thomas N. Perkins IV. A family of explorers go out and have awesome adventures.
Okay. Sounds interesting, because digital seems to be the way to go. I mean, there's a lot of stuff, like, as I've talked before, there's Batman, Legends of the Dark Knights comes out digital only from DC, and so there seems to be people who are putting their toe in the water, trying to see if they can make money with this.
Have you heard of Madefire? That's an app that's out right now, and it's got guys like Dave Gibbons and a lot of other British people involved, and they have their series of comic books on it.
No, I haven't. I'll have to check that out, Madefire.
Yeah, it's really interesting, really, really cool.
Great.
Voice acting, animation, some cool stuff.
Yeah, great.
That's it for news for me.
All right, well, let me throw in a story real quick.
Sure.
There was an interview with Greg Capullo talking about the Return of the Joker, and he's getting to redesign the Joker's look. Is what's happening. We've only seen little bits of what's going on, and the images have been released so far. And when the Newsarama asked him, well, what do you want readers to know about the Joker story that you and Scott Snyder are doing for Death of the Family? He says, I would say that if you have any kind of heart conditions or any kind of medical issues that could cause seizures or whatnot, you should check with your doctor prior to buying this story arc. Because we don't want to be responsible. DC does not want to be responsible for any fatalities or hospitalization of young and old people who may encounter this story. It is just simply too much for their system. I guess he's trying to up the ante some. But I get a kick out of that, because this whole thing has turned into a huge event, just like the Owls did. It's going to go over into other Batman-related comics, too, even including Teen Titans this time, which is, I find, interesting. So this is going to be another big deal. It seems like every time Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo do an arc, it spills over into a lot of the other Batman books, so... That's a good thing based on what they did with the Owls. So the only news that I've got, so.
All right, that's a big one.
Yeah, okay. As far as things that you're looking forward to on the 25th, what have you got on your list?
Sure, there's some interesting stuff. Dark Horse has a couple of interesting titles. Axe Cop, President of the World Number One. Mm-hmm. It's a miniseries that they have, Further Adventures of Axe Cop.
Now, you know, that's being turned into an animated series, right?
Yeah. I have the first trade. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing, the story behind that. The guy and his little kid brother creating
it. Mm-hmm.
Resident Alien number 3 goes on sale.
Yeah, my friend Dave Romeo, who I recommended that to on Facebook, thanked me for doing it. He really likes the book now, so that's cool.
Me too. Surprised me.
Different.
Yeah. DC has Before Watchmen, Comedian number 2.
Mm-hmm.
Justice League Dark number 11 goes on sale as well.
Mm-hmm.
Dynamite has Lord of the Jungle number 6 by Arvin Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
IDW has Crow, Midnight Legends, Volume 1, Dead Time, graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
It's from Crow creator James O'Barr and artist by Alex Maleev.
Mm-hmm.
So, really cool continuation of the Crow series.
Mm-hmm.
Boom Studios has Exile on Planet of the Apes number 4, which is the final issue of the miniseries, as well as Planet of the Apes number 16.
Mm-hmm.
Titan has Everybody Loves Tank Girl number 1. I don't know if that's going to be any good, but it is interesting. Tank Girl is a very popular franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hill and Wang, which puts out some good books, has Harvey Pekar's last graphic novel called Not the Israel My Parents Promised Me. It's kind of a political book talking about how, growing up Jewish, he was always a big supporter of Israel up until a certain point when he's kind of been disenfranchised by it.
Oh, cool.
Well, him and Mike Turner, they're going to be the Tupac of the comic book world, where they keep putting out books long after they're dead, you know?
That's for sure. Michael Turner stuff's still coming out.
He still has exclusive covers for books and stuff like that. They keep pulling out a new Mike Turner cover.
Supergirl, every time I see his costume, which I think was one of the very best Supergirl costumes, every time I see that somewhere, it's always referred to as the Michael Turner Supergirl costume. So I think that's kind of cool. Anything else?
That's it for me.
All right, let me real quickly run down a couple of things that I'm looking forward to. Vic Boone, the trade paperback from 215 Inc. is coming out. That's a collection of the first story, which I really enjoyed. Came out about a year ago, so if folks haven't seen it, it's very good. I'm planning on getting the trade anyway, just because I like the stuff. There's supposed to be some extra stuff involved with it. And he's talking about doing a series with other creators involved using the character. One of the stories is supposed to be explained how he's got this white tuft in his hair. So that's going to come along. So that's going to be a lot of fun. There's Garfield and Company. There's a hard. It looks like it's a hardcover. $7.99. That's probably going to do well now that the Garfield comics have started dribbling out.
Who releases that book?
You know, I don't know that. It just says Garfield and Company hardcover. I'm not sure. $7.99, but I'm sure it's the company that usually releases his stuff, so.
No, but I don't think it's the Boom. It's not Boom.
No, I don't think so. But I'm just thinking if people are buying the comic, the stores could buy that and put that next to the comic and might fork over a little more money. $7.99, that's not all that much more than the $3.99 book.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not too bad. Another book that's good, we were talking about the creator of Bane, Chuck Dixon. Airboy Deadeye number 3 is coming out. You know, I forget the company that puts that out, but it's a good comic. It's black and white, so people have to be aware. It's $3.50, so it's more than $2.99. You're going to get a black and white comic. If you don't like black and white comics, this may not be your thing, but it's been a good story. Chuck Dixon always tells good stories. It's never a bad thing with that. Venom number 21 is coming out. There's also John Carter, Gods of Mars, number 5 from Marvel. I'm not sure how that's going to do, given how the movie kind of flubbed.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Captain America number 15, I think that's coming to an end, and they're going to redo it. There's also Captain America and Iron Man number 634. I find that intriguing. I think that's the Tales of Suspense numbering that's coming to play there. Mark Waid's Daredevil, Volume 1, the trade paperbacks came out. The hardcover came out not that long ago.
That got a lot of Eisner love, too.
Yeah, it did. Well, he's doing a good job with it. In the current book, for example, he's got Daredevil is in Latveria, and Dr. Doom is trying to figure out how he got his radar sense. And the bad news is his radar sense is malfunctioning. They hit him with something that's gummed up his radar sense, and so while they're trying to figure it out, it's either not working or it's working too well, and he's struggling to try to get things to work right. It's pretty good. I like the story pretty well. It ends interestingly, so it's a good story. I like it a lot. Go to Image and Chew Secret Agent Poyo number 1, the San Diego cover comes out. Then we've also got Manhattan Projects, which is a really demented book, number 5. And I also like Near Death number 10. That's a good series going on. And Super Dinosaur, Mr. Kirkman's attempt to do kids' books. Very good. As far as IDW, I think Trio, which is John Byrne trying to do a new version of the Fantastic Four, is out. And True Blood Ongoing number 3 is also out.
Do you read that?
Yeah, I like it. It's actually pretty good. It's pretty faithful to the show. The people look like the actors very well, so pretty good. I like the book real well. They did several miniseries before they decided to go with an ongoing.
Nice.
So they knew full well that it was going to work out pretty well, so it wasn't a big surprise. DC's got All-Star Western number 11, Aquaman, Batman Incorporated, Batman the Dark Knight. That's the second Greg Hurwitz issue, so that should be quite a lot of fun. Then I think we've got Flash, which I like, Green Lantern, and Green Lantern New Guardians are out. So there's a lot of good things. Savage Hawkman is good. Superman, which is struggling of late. It sells well, but nobody knows quite what to do with it. And Teen Titans and Voodoo, number 11's out.
Yeah, Voodoo's ending, I believe.
Oh, is it? It's one of the ones that they're going to cancel? That's too bad, because I actually kind of am warming up to it as it goes along. Well, I Vampire's also out, so those two books go together. But I imagine when the axe falls, those will be the amongst the first to go. The Grifter trade paperback, I think that's another book that's probably on the bubble, if not on the chopping block.
Right.
And another, Mr. Snyder, speaking of him, American Vampire number 29, which is good. He's got a miniseries going on, too. So that guy is a busy guy. Mr. Snyder is writing as fast as he can.
Very busy.
He's going and going and going. I got a big kick because the ads that DC used to promote what they were doing at Comic-Con had Geoff Johns, and in another ad they had Scott Snyder, and I get a chance to write him an email every once in a while, and I said, you know, you're in good company there, Scott, if you're there with the chief creative officer in those ads. So that's pretty cool. Oh, and a Savage Hawkman, which I have to say is better than I expected it to be, is out too.
You're buying it since Rob Liefeld took over.
Yeah, I'm still buying it, and it's still pretty good. It's not bad.
Is it better or worse than before?
I don't like it as much, but it's better than I expected it to be. So that's a good sign. So I hate to say that in some ways, but Tony Daniel, I think, is a good writer. And he has some very interesting stuff. And he incorporated some of the Hawkman's old continuity in the middle of it. And it was, I liked it real well. Now, I think Fury of Firestorm's also being canceled, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm not sure.
The Nuclear Man. I like that pretty well. They're doing some very interesting and different things with it, but God, so hard to know. With the New 52 going around, and we know that some are going away, it's hard to know which ones are going away and which ones aren't.
Yeah, so, they're already starting a third wave of stuff, you know.
Yeah. Okay, and on that note, we'll call to a close this week's news and previews, and we'll talk with you again next week, John Luca.
Well, thank you very much.
Talk briefly about The Dark Knight Rises. I was really happy I got to see it on Friday after the tragedy in Aurora, Colorado, and I'd really hate for this film, which has a strong anti-terrorist message, to suffer at the hands of a real-life terrorist. Now, the film itself is set 8 years in the future from The Dark Knight, and Bane has come to Gotham City. He's a quite interesting character, and he does a lot of damage to the place. We come to understand that what this guy says, kind of like the Joker before him, is not what he really means. And from the first few moments until the last sequence, I felt this film is a worthy successor and a satisfying finale to the Christopher Nolan Christian Bale Batman trilogy of films. There are so many interesting storylines taking place that my attention was gripped all the way through the film. Even the slower, and I put that in quote marks, character parts contributed to the movie in very significant ways. There's lots of action, lots of twists and turns. Those made my head spin sometimes. And surprises that kept me on the edge of my seat the whole time. Even the last few minutes kept the pace going forward, and there's some interesting revelations at that time. So don't get up and leave early. Now, people who don't like Bale's Batman voice or Nolan's putting the hero in the 21st century, you guys won't like this movie. On the other hand, I was grateful to see a lot of the plot threads from previous films that hadn't been resolved come to their epic conclusion this time. So it's an instant classic for me. Things I like that I can mention without giving too much of the plot away included the fact that Catwoman was never called that during the film. And Batman is an adventurer who gives his all for the city he loves, something not everybody in the film was ready to do, as you'll see. And even the minor characters still got meaty things to do, which I liked. Hans Zimmer's score fits the film to a T, and that includes the playing of certain pieces of music when a character or situation's on the rise. If you've seen the film, you know what I'm referring to. Ultimately, this is the story about how we shouldn't surrender our freedoms to those who say that they have our best interests at heart, because often they don't. Replacing one corrupt system with another may actually be deadly. And what makes Bruce Wayne, Batman, a real hero is the fact that he takes the punches and damage inflicted on him and rises up again to take on the bad guys. It's no wonder he's my favorite comic book hero. If you haven't seen this movie, I would encourage you to go and support it by taking in a showing as soon as you can. I give it 5 out of 5 bats. And that's my review of The Dark Knight Rises. And that's a wrap for the 60th episode. Be sure to be back next week when we'll have plenty more good things to talk about. But until then, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
More the tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine.
So what do you think?
Does it come in black?